Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining today's discussion. I'm Ami Copeland, Executive Director here at Business Forward, and I'll be moderating our conversation today. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. We are pleased to welcome Mark Dowd, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Research and Technology at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Today, we'll be talking about the federal government's efforts to spur smart city development through public-private partnerships. For those of you who are new to our programming, Business Forward organizes local roundtables, Washington fly-ins, conference calls, webinars, and media trainings for tens of thousands of business leaders from across America. At these briefings, entrepreneurs, investors, small business owners, and executives get the chance to brief policymakers on issues affecting their businesses, on how to create jobs, and how Washington can work with business to accelerate our economy. To date, more than 550 senior administration officials, members of Congress, governors, and mayors have participated in our programming. This is all thanks to the support of more than 60 of America's largest and most respected companies. Before we get started, I want to go over a few housekeeping items. First, this discussion is on the record. A recording will be sent out after the call, along with all the resources that are mentioned during the call today. Secondly, there will be time for you to ask questions and share your advice. You can do this in one of two ways. You can press 1 at any time to ask your question live, or you can email your question to info@businessfwd.org. We'd like to get in as many questions as we can, so again, just a reminder, you can press 1 to ask your question live, or please email your question to info@businessfwd.org, and we'll add it to the queue. Okay, now let's get started. Please welcome Mark Dowd, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Research and Technology at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Mark?
Thank you, Ami. I thought I'd spend a couple minutes just kind of laying out a little bit of what we tried to do at the Department of Transportation with regard to the Smart City Challenge, and then get into the interactive aspect. But there were two things that we tried to address with the Smart City Challenge. Basically looking at a report that we put out called Beyond Traffic, and the report basically identifies the storm that is coming to cities with regard to transportation. And we focused on moving people, moving goods, and how technology innovation is going to try to address some of those issues. And we realized that, you know, having a report is a great thing, but trying to figure out how to actually accelerate the city's approach to this or change their viewpoint, we decided to take an approach that is correct the second thing we don't necessarily do well, which is usually in our grant giving, we identify certain things you have to do to get our grant, right? So if you need to build a bridge, or you need to put in a highway, or you need to put in a transit system, and those are very top-down type of approach to grant making, and it's a very DC-centric kind of approach. We think we know what is best for you, and what we try to do differently is to instead turn it around and say to the cities, hey, you guys know your problems better than we do. You understand the issues you're trying to solve. Why don't you, cities, tell us in a 30-page vision document what it is how you are going to use technology innovation to address these issues that are coming your way. We focused on medium-sized cities because we felt that medium-sized cities were less capable of building their way out of the problem, right? So the larger cities have more capacity to build their way out, put it in a BRT line, et cetera, to build themselves out of the problem. And the medium-sized cities, I think, with the secretary is a former mayor of a medium-sized city. I think he understood the issues that medium-sized cities are facing and realized that they needed more tools in the toolbox and how to address these issues. So the idea of putting a single sum of money out there as opposed to spreading the money out across like peanut butter, we put a single large sum of money, $40 million, out for the cities to focus on. Only one city would win, which is not typical, And what that forced cities to do when we asked them to put together the 30-page vision element is force cities to focus on technology and innovation as a means in which to solve the problem. So on December 8th, we put out our notice of funding. We require the cities to submit their proposals by February 4th, and we expected probably about 30 or 40 applications to be submitted by the cities, medium-sized cities, and what we got was 78 applications from cities all across the country trying to lay out a plan. So you almost could say at that point we've succeeded, because we've now changed the narrative for 78 cities and how they look. They look to the 21st century as opposed to 20th century solutions. But we then took those 78 applications, ran them through a pretty intense procurement process that only lasted for about 3 weeks here at the department. And we down-selected the 7 finalists, and we announced those finalists at South by Southwest in March. And those were San Francisco, Denver, Austin, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and Columbus. And those 7 cities were then run through a separate process where we worked on what I refer to as the collaboration phase, where the cities learned to collaborate together to, even though only one city was going to win, they could share ideas, share approaches, and make each other's applications better, because they weren't competing. Secretary made it very clear they weren't competing with each other, they were competing against themselves. So the cities had to understand what their internal problems were and then submit an application, a 75-page application, identifying what technologies they were going to use to get to solve those problems. So they identify the problems through the public engagement and stakeholder engagement process. During that March to June time frame, and then identify the solutions that would bring them forward. The other important thing we did between March and June is we being the Department of Transportation, identified a number of partnerships that we thought were good for the cities, for the benefit of the winning city. And that was approximately $30 million in public-private partnerships identified in terms of resources. And then we took the cities through a process of teaching them how to look at the private sector not as vendors, but as potential partners on implementing the technology. I think that change in viewpoint of not seeing companies just as vendors, but as potential partners is, I think, a little bit of a shift, and I think an interesting way to define public-private partnerships for the cities. And the success of that was demonstrated in that our $40 million got over $500 million worth of public-private partnership money for the 7 cities. And that was broken down into Columbus, which ended up winning. For our $40 million, we got $140 million for Columbus. I think San Francisco did a pretty cool thing. They did put up a website and did crowdfunding for 12 days. They put up a website, said, if you have an idea and you want to put some skin in the game, submit your name and what you're going to do. And they raised, I think, $154 million in 12 days. Columbus raised their $140 differently. They did it both with the town fathers or the companies, the non-competitive money from the different companies there in Columbus, like Nationwide and other companies like that are resident in the city, and raised about $40 or $50 million from those companies, and then raised additional money from other public-private partnerships that was more on the competitive side, from companies like Honda, et cetera, that have a competitive interest in the smart city piece. Kansas City raised about $110 million off of our 40, and they did it by basically having a number of large partners. So For example, Cisco was a 40-some-odd million-dollar partner for Kansas City. And then the other cities were basically did a mixture of those three different models to raise money for their demonstrations. There are a number of interesting things that we did that I think the cities were very innovative and interesting. One of them was that we moved them through the process so fast. So basically, it was a full 6 months. It's not obviously something the federal government does well, but we moved very fast, and we caused the cities to move fast too. So there was, and that quick pace caused them to break down a little bit of the stove piping that happens within the city, because they had to get their act together quickly because they were competing with other cities. So they didn't have enough time to really form disagreements. And they found that the consensus building during that quick period of time of the challenge was able, they were able to get it together, I think, quicker and find solutions faster. So there's a lot more to talk about, but I thought that was a good starter point. I jammed a lot in there in 10 minutes, but if you have any questions, let me know.
Great. Thank you so much, Mark. Now we'll open it up to your questions and comments. Again, if you have a question, please press 1 to speak live on the call, or, again, you can email your question to info@businessfwd.org. Please be sure to tell us the name of your company and where you're calling from in that email and or if we call upon you. As we let the list sort of grow here, we actually have a couple questions that were submitted online before. First question is actually from David Gunter in St. Louis, Missouri. The question is, how do these projects balance privacy and security? By connecting so much to the internet, it seems like cities could be more exposed to cyber threats that could really could wreak havoc. Any questions, thoughts on that?
Sure. I think that the privacy and cybersecurity issues obviously have to be in the forefront, to the extent that one of the innovations that we wanted the cities to do was an open data aspect, right? So the advantage, obviously, in an open data environment is that people in real time can learn from what the city is doing, right? What the city is. So if they're running like 5 different demonstration projects and the data is open, then app developers and other businesses and others can look in and learn. But again, the issue that you have to make sure you guard against is the privacy and cybersecurity issue. To try to add capacity to, so a lot of the inherent in the question is that a lot of cities lack, a lot of medium-sized cities particularly, lack capacity within the city to have like a chief data officer or a chief privacy officer. And so that capacity piece is a critical part of what we're trying to do, right, trying to build capacity within the cities. We partner with the Department of Energy and in conversation with the Department of Homeland Security to provide Columbus with that capacity, both from a privacy and from a cybersecurity perspective, to make sure that the data is kept safe and anonymized. So that's our attempt to try to address those issues.
Great, thank you. We'll go to the live line for our next caller for our next question, and the caller is Peter Denegi from Frisco, Texas. Peter, your line is open. Peter? All right, not a problem. We'll actually go to another one of our submitted questions online. And this is from Beverly Davis in Urbandale, Iowa. The question is, how closely did DOT consider other infrastructure needs during this competition, specifically such as water and energy?
Yeah, we stuck to what we do well, which is transportation. So we have an incredible amount of capacity within the department to focus on transportation issues, so we can bring a lot of expertise to bear. So the focus of the challenge was transportation issues. But what was interesting is a lot of the problems that were identified by the cities weren't transportation problems, right? But the transportation was then identified as a solution to some of the problems. So So the energy piece to me was a fascinating outcome for this, which was that the decarbonization aspect of what we asked the cities to do was front and center. So Columbus's application and the reason why we found it so compelling is that they had the utility, AEP, as a partner in the process, and AEP committed, I think it was 20-some-odd million dollars to provide 1 gigawatt of clean energy, which is a pretty phenomenal piece of this. And there's a significant amount of electrification that goes on also in the Columbus application. So the Vulcan Foundation was an early partner, a launch partner of ours, and they provided $10 million to Columbus to help them electrify their transportation system. And so that Vulcan partnership with DOT then brought in additional money in addition to AEP, other companies that brought in and helped are helping Columbus decarbonize. And when I say decarbonize, taking some of the climate, you know, goes to the climate and the energy issues that are related to the typical way we get around.
Great, thank you. We're going to go to our next caller, and this is Bert Kaufman in San Francisco, California. Bert, your line's open.
Great, Ami. Thanks so much. Mark, really great that you're joining the call. I guess our question with an autonomous vehicle company called Zoox. How did the department think about autonomous vehicles in awarding the grant?
Sure. So we provided 12 vision elements, is what we refer to them as, and grouped them into three categories. The highest priority vision elements were autonomous vehicles, connected vehicles, and sensors. And what was fascinating to us is that this, out of the 78 applications, autonomous vehicles were in a full half of the applications in terms of front and center. And of the seven finalists, every single one of them had an autonomous vehicle proposal piece that was in their application. So we, you know, and I can certainly say I believe that the pathway for autonomous vehicles, to me, you know, you can do the iterative aspect of how you go through if you have a car company and the next model year will have something new. But the urban environment, I think, provides a different pathway to autonomous vehicles. And we were trying to get cities to focus on the fact that in an urban environment, you have much more capability to increase utilization rates of the vehicles that are out there if they're autonomous. And so you can both reduce congestion, reduce carbon, and basically make a better place to live if you can start figuring out a way to get autonomous vehicles as part of your transportation system.
Excellent, thank you. Our next question is coming from Melinda Lockhart in Allen, Texas. Melinda, your line's open.
Hi. From my observation with a lot of these city projects, there doesn't appear to be someone responsible for overall integration, program management of the vendors, as well as setting up the first response when things go wrong, because it can be any number of the vendors that have the problem, but no one seems to have the first call oversight. How do you see the management of these multiple partner programs actually working and being managed?
Sure. So there are two answers to the question. First is the department is, you know, we aren't just providing them the money and then saying hopefully in 3 years it all works out. We have a significant amount of experience in demonstration projects or pilots in running those pilots with entities. And so the way we go about it is we are entering into a cooperative agreement with Columbus, and in that cooperative agreement has a number of deliverables, oversight, et cetera, with regard to the partnerships, right? So your point is exactly right. What happens when the vendors, you know, when something doesn't work out or something's falling apart? Or if so, with monthly calls and monthly oversight by the department, that is one check on that issue. The second is the interesting thing about the partnership piece. And the reason why we pushed really hard for partnerships to be front and center of this, you know, everybody talks a lot about public-private partnerships, but I think at the department we were able to do something that actually got traction on the public-private partnership piece, which is that look, the political team here is obviously going to be leaving soon, and how do we ensure that the success of what we're trying to do carries forward? In addition to the cooperative agreement, when you have partners who are putting significant resources into the city, there is that skin in the game piece, or that aspect of the company being engaged with the city. They're no longer vendors looking just to take money. They're actually partnering, and the success of that particular demonstration project for which they are part of, they are invested to make sure that succeeds. So it changes to me that it's both the oversight by both the city and the department over the whole project, but it's also the city's, I mean, the vendors moving from a vendor to a partnership ensures that there is going to be accountability both from the company and the city, if you follow on that.
Great. Thank you very much. Our next question is coming from Stephen Kabiru in Dover, Delaware. Stephen, your line's open. Stephen?
Huh.
All right. We will go to one of our submitted questions right now. This is from Patrick Burke in Poughkeepsie, New York. Are there any upcoming DOT events where I can learn more about connecting my business with possible projects across the country?
I'm sure there are many of these events. I'm not as familiar with them in terms of the public outreach that we do. There are people here at the department who will have a much better idea of these events that we do. But you know, with regard to if I think the my guess is the question goes to how do I get plugged into these types of things, right? How do I as a business engage in future demonstration projects, et cetera? And I think there are a significant amount of opportunities both from the Department of Energy and Department of Transportation through the demonstration. We have the Advanced Technology Congestion Mitigation Grants that we'll be announcing at the end of this month, I think. Which will award approximately $60 million to states and cities across the country for demonstration projects. And you know, I would suggest following that announcement and seeing which cities or which states win that and try to engage with them on that.
Great, thank you. And just as a reminder, we will be sending out information about anything that was discussed on this call, as well as any events that are coming down and are listed on the DOT website. So we'll be letting folks know about this. The next question was actually submitted from Indra Klein here in Washington, D.C. And the question is, with regard to public-private partnerships, what percentage of the participants are nonprofits and small businesses? And is there a set number around those? A follow-up to that is, are they part of the supply chain, or are they substantial partners in these projects?
I don't have percentages as to how that breaks down, but there were not as many nonprofit partners as you would like, because they were required to bring resources, and it's harder for a nonprofit to bring resources. But I know that within the cities there is I know in Columbus there is a significant amount of nonprofits that do partner with the city. One of the primary issues that they are trying to solve there in Columbus is the infant mortality rate, right? Not a transportation issue, you would think, right? But that is, they have the neighborhood of Linden, which is a traditional African-American neighborhood, does not have a single OBGYN office in the entire neighborhood, and the consequence of that is they have an infant mortality rate that's four times the national average. And Columbus, working with nonprofits there and trying to reduce that number, has the Smart City Challenge is going to provide them resources to develop technology and applications to get the expecting mothers and new mothers to the doctor using innovative ways of transportation and tracking to make sure that the mothers get to the doctors, and it's all done by the provider. So I think that is an interesting way that we're in Columbus specifically, where nonprofits are partnering. A lot of the partners, I think, I think the best way to describe it, a lot of the for-profit companies that were there were very wide range of representation. Yes, there are supply chain folks. There are folks that are trying to figure out. I think a lot of companies are interested in partnering with cities because they don't really know the competitive space yet that smart cities and Internet of Things provides, right? So there is a pre-competitive aspect for technology companies looking at cities and looking at cities as incubators of this technology or these ideas, that there's to me, a natural partnership between the pre-competitive companies, which fall in a wide range, right? Large companies, small companies, medium-sized companies. But this pre-competitive aspect, the cities have, from my perspective, leverage to deal with those companies that they just have to learn to speak the same language. So the a lot of the partners, and that's a challenge, right, for both the cities, who usually have medium-sized cities, have limited capacity to speak the language of the technology companies. And reverse of that is, the technology companies often don't really fully understand cities and find them to be a difficult place to try to incubate ideas. But there is a natural partnership there. And I think what the Smart City Challenge did was shine a very bright light on the incredible opportunity the cities have to partner with the technology companies on these particular issues.
Excellent. Thank you. And our next question is coming from Naperville, Illinois, and the questioner is Uzair Hussein. Uzair?
Hey, thanks for setting all this up, guys. I'm calling from Clue. We're a smart life controller, and smart cities and smart environments are our direct focus. So my question is related to Chicago, and I guess cities along that note. I was able to speak to some of the folks in these around the topics of data, XML data from the website, train routes, bus routes, these sort of things, so we can start kind of bringing on-demand economy closer to smart city and just work around it. The challenges we're hitting, though, is that, you know, the city office was a bit restricted in their resources, and then there were also thoughts around federal support isn't as strong as we thought it would be. And, you know, as a small company, we're not a huge company like a Cisco or a Nationwide, but, you know, we're doing some really cool things with the technology, and we're showing scalable options. And I guess I just wanted to learn from you firsthand, like, what's the best approach, or is this the right way to be doing things, or is there something else that we can be doing? Because we'd love to be partners, but even those things, those thoughts were kind of shot down in a way where it was that we don't do partnerships, or city doesn't partner exclusively with specific technologies. So we weren't looking for anything exclusive, but just what's the best approach to this whole thing so we can, again, like you said, put skin in the game? We'd love to, we already did, but just want to get a higher level understanding so we can scale the same approach to other cities after Chicago.
Sure. I think cities are in the process of learning too. So it can be frustrating, and I certainly understand. You know, I hear the frustration in your voice. The challenge, from my perspective, is to use hopefully what we did as a model of how it could work. Right. That there is, you know, Columbus has won the Smart City Challenge. It's been about 2 months, less than 2 months. So we have to have something to demonstrate some success points to point to be able to show that these partnerships can work and that there's not a problem in partnering with companies to demonstrate certain technologies. So that it's you know, we haven't solved the whole problem, but we can start getting proof points out there that this actually can work. And that's to me the scalability of not just the technology, but the ideas within the city. So they show if Columbus can show you how to do it, then the other cities can learn from it, and then it becomes the pathway for companies like yours becomes much easier.
The next question is coming from Rick McRae in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Rick?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, perfect. I was wondering, do y'all have a vehicle where the private and the government side can partner up, like a place where those matches can be made and those conversations can be had, and also a way to, because a lot of times if you approach a DOT department or something like that, they view you as a vendor. And how do you bridge that gap from vendor to partner?
So it's being a partner, right? It's trying to demonstrate the value exchange, right? You've got to demonstrate a value exchange for the city. Why would the city want to partner with you? What is, you know, everybody's going to run at the city saying, I've got this great technology, I want to partner. But that to me, you know, if you don't know what the problem is in the city, any technology does, you know, will work. But if the city has identified and understands the problems that they have, right? So, say, like with Columbus, the infant mortality rate. Then you go into the city and you say, look, I can help you solve this problem, and I want to partner with you to do it. I think that's the thing that we worked hard with the cities to do is getting them to know who they are. Getting them to understand what their issues are, and then trying to marry the solutions up with those issues using technology and innovation, right? So that to me is more of the, you know, to try to get the tumblers to fall into place, I think understanding what the city's, you know, listening to the city, understanding what the issues are and what they're trying to solve, and then coming to them with a technology solution and offering to partner with them.
Excellent. Thank you. Our next question is from Mary Schneider in Dallas, Texas. And the question is, what is the most innovative technology you've seen during the Smart City Challenge process?
I don't think there's just one, but the one that I think Denver had a couple cool ideas. One of them was that they were going to use electric vehicles and put them out and offer them for rideshare or car sharing at $5 an hour. So to try to encourage like the Ubers and the Lyft drivers and the taxi cab drivers to use electric vehicles, they were only charging $5 an hour to try to encourage that. I thought that was kind of a cool idea and a way to try to get the fleet to turn over. And I think the other thing that Denver had, their automated vehicle approach was they just put in light rail. I think there's approximately 40 or 50 stops on the light rail. And one of the stops ends at a new Panasonic campus. And the idea was to provide first mile, last mile with AV pods. And I thought that was the capability to scale not just, to other cities, but to scale within Denver, is that you have this new light rail, and now if you can show that the AV pods work, that you can actually scale across the different stops that you have, you know, from the new light rail. I thought that was pretty cool.
Excellent. Our next question is from Nathaniel Turner in Ellicott City, Maryland.
Hi, good afternoon. I was just looking, listening to this, and you were saying it's a requirement for the program. I'm just thinking, as we talk about job creation and the green economy, in these smart city challenges, were there any requirement for retraining and possible job creation to maintain what they built in there? And also, were there any requirements for alternative energy sources to reduce the carbon footprint as they retool the city?
So we took a different approach from a funding perspective. We didn't dictate to the cities what they must do, right? So we allowed the innovators to innovate, right? The cities are incredible laboratories of ideas, and if you start doing a top-down approach, I think you end up with a skewed result. But there were cities, particularly San Francisco, who really gave a lot of thought to, hey, if we turn over our fleet of taxis to automated vehicles, where are all these workers going to go? What are they going to do? So they did. San Francisco gave thought and was very thoughtful about turning, you know, job training, etc. And again, Columbus, I think every single one of the seven finalists certainly gave a significant amount of thought to the carbon footprint piece, decarbonizing the transportation system. I think there's two. One is a very proactive way, right, the electrification, et cetera, of the fleets, of the buses and stuff like that. But I think the other thing that is fascinating is that the mobility options, right, so if there was a mobility platform for which you, as a user of the system, could figure out how you get from point A to B using various modes of transportation using a single payer approach, right? So if I wanted to get from my house to the football stadium, and then from there to a restaurant, I could actually go on an app and lay out the different options, and so I would be able to see I take a train to there and then a taxi to there, and you could pay for a single way. What that does is get you out of your car. You leave your car at home, and the mobility options, by their natural implementation, decarbonize or lessen the footprint of having many cars in the city. So so one is a very, very proactive approach. One is more of a consequence of having more mobility options.
Excellent. Thank you. And our final question is actually going to be submitted online, and we're going to combine two of them here. And Pete Denegi from Frisco, Texas, sent in his question. The question is, will USDOT make the 78 responses and submissions available for review so that we can leverage the thought leadership for other cities with their own projects? And then just building off that, is there a non-government entity where cities can take their smart city plans to learn about best practices and or to try to obtain outside funding?
So the first part, there are the 78 applications, right? So that those are already online. We have them up on our website, transportation.gov. /smartcities. If you go there, you'll see the 78 applications. The seven applications we expect to put up ahead of the Smart City Week in September, which is the last week in September, I think we have a story to tell. So the department, I think, has a story to tell about the Smart City Challenge and the information and data that's in those 78 applications and the seven winning applications. I think that those have a pretty cool story to tell, and so we intend to publish the seven in probably within a month, in the next month, so that's up in time for Smart City Week here in D.C. With regard to a nonprofit or an entity that is, you know, has all this, you know, to go to, I think I have confidence that this space will be occupied by some or a number of different entities who are going to seek to provide that type of technical assistance, that kind of collaborative approach for the cities. But that right now, we're still working on what that looks like.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mark. That is all we have time for today. There were a large number of questions and comments that we weren't able to get to. If you haven't yet, please send an email to info@businessfwd.org, and we will help you get an answer. Please note that after this call, we'll send you an email with a link to a quick survey. We always seek your input to improve our programming and would appreciate your feedback. We'll also include a recording of today's call and information from what Mark spoke about is some of the DOT resources from the agency. Again, a special thank you to Mark and his team and to everyone who joined. I hope we have a great day and that this conversation was helpful. Thank you again, Mark.
Thank you.